Well, we're starting a bit ahead of schedule. I hope this didn't mean you had to gulp your coffee uncomfortably quickly, but it does give more time for your tours of the laboratory, which are rather tightly scheduled on the original programme. I'm very glad to see you all here and to welcome you all to the Rutherford Laboratory. I hope you had a reasonably enjoyable trip this morning and that you will enjoy your visit with us. This is the first press visit to the Rutherford Laboratory, except for a smaller affair arranged by the DSIR last year in connection with the British National Hydrogen Bubble Chamber. It's certainly the first occasion on which the press can spend some time with us, take a really close look at what we do, and to discuss our work with us. And I hope you'll find this profitable. You know, I'm sure, that we work here mainly on research in high energy physics, although there are some other things which we do too. The study of high energy physics can be briefly described as a study of the properties and the structure of the elementary particles of which the whole universe is made. 30 years ago or so, physicists used to talk about a mere 3 or 4 of these objects. By 5 years ago, about 1959, there were 30 or so. Now, people speak of numbers over 100. And physicists are wondering which, if any, of these subatomic objects have a right to be called elementary. Certainly, they can't all be given this title. And now the fact that this work attracts the attention of many of the world's ablest scientists bears out that it is one of the most important frontiers of human knowledge in the present day. At the Rutherford Laboratory, we aim to work in this field in such a way that the universities can make free use of our facilities and conduct their own research programs there while still remaining full members of their own academic communities, in particular while still teaching their students. The laboratory is now in an interesting and crucial stage because after a long time, over 6 years of construction, we're now entering the field of high energy physics and we can begin to do the work for which we were set up. The activities of the laboratory are summarized in a booklet which you have been given, and I shan't repeat very much this morning of what you will find in there. Since the building phase of a large laboratory such as this, based on mainly on one very large piece of equipment, takes such a long time, perhaps I could spend a moment or two talking about the history of the laboratory. We grew out of the accelerator division and the part of the engineering division of the AERE, Harwell, next door, starting in 1957. The present payroll of the laboratory is 945, or it was at the last headcount, and it's growing now quite slowly. From the beginning, our work has been based mainly on two accelerating machines. These are the 50 million electron volt proton NU accelerator and the 7GeV, 7,000 million electron volt proton synchrotron Nimrod, recently completed. The PLA, the proton NU accelerator, was partly in existence when we started. It was about half built. It was an Atomic Energy Authority project, and it was transferred to us at the beginning. We first operated it at full energy in 1959, and we've been using it for research in collaboration with the university since 1960. Nimrod produced its first beam, as you know, at 8 GeV last August. These two machines are extremely powerful research instruments. The PLA fills an important gap in an energy range which has been relatively neglected, rather above, considerably above, the highest energy which can be reached by the electrostatic generators, which are very much used in the study of nuclear structure, but of course much below the energies of the true high energy machines, which are used to study the unstable particles. We think that at the present time, with its ancillary facilities which we've developed to go with it, the PLA is the most powerful machine in this energy range in the world. And it has proved extremely valuable in helping us to do the work which we were set up to do here. It's in use 24 hours a day, except for those times when it has to be maintained or changes made in experimental arrangement. It is manned 24 hours a day, and an average of about 50 nuclear physicists have been using it, 40 of whom are from universities, and the others from our own staff here and the Atomic Energy Research Establishment. The machine has been used regularly by 7 university physics departments and has now a steady output, running at the moment at about 6 a year, of doctorates awarded to research students at these universities on theses based on work with the PLA. We have a staff of about 100 or so people here who operate and maintain this machine and make the special apparatus for the research teams and develop the machine and its ancillary equipment to satisfy the increasing complication, sophistication of the research program. Nimrod is now operating and joins the really big machines which are capable of supporting frontline research in high energy physics proper. There are about 12 other machines operating in the world at the moment in this class, 6 of them in the United States, 3 in the Soviet Union, and 3 others in other parts of Western Europe. On the scale of particle energy, Nimrod is 5th in this party, but it's already up among the leaders so far as the accelerated intensity of the beams is concerned. Currently we're accelerating 3 times 10 to the 11 protons per second at 7 GeV. Now British physicists since 1960, the beginning of 1960, have been able to share in the use of one of the 2 highest energy machines existing in the world at the present time, namely the 28 GeV proton synchrotron at CERN. Now with Nimrod they have for their own use, and closely coupled with the work in the universities as I've described, the what you might call the biggest national machine in Western Europe. But of course the accelerator itself is only the beginning. Present day research in high energy physics needs a great deal of massive and sophisticated equipment to separate and transport to where they're needed the beams of the different kinds of particles that are produced when the proton beam from the accelerator bombards a target in it, to detect and record the particle collisions and other high energy phenomena which are investigated in the experiments, for example by photographing the tracks of particles passing through bubble chambers, and to analyze and to compute the data collected in these experiments. At the moment Nimrod is very well equipped with all this kind of apparatus and is probably, we think, better equipped than other comparable machines have been at this stage in their development, so soon after their first operation. This is not because we were wiser than other people,
but because it is a sort of bonus for having started a little bit late in this field, in this country, and we were able to see the experiences of others over the last few years when the developments in all these ancillary matters were extremely rapid. It helped us to catch up a bit. Now, the developments in the science and technology of the experiments, the apparatus in this field, are still extremely rapid, and our efforts on research equipment and methods will have to be sustained and extended in the future. There are three large bubble chambers on our program, two of which are still being built, and the other one, the British National Liquid Hydrogen Bubble Chamber, is at CERN at present, as part of a long-standing arrangement to put the biggest European bubble chamber at the highest energy European machine. We're expecting it to come back to this laboratory sometime next year, by which time there should be ready an even bigger bubble chamber, which has the CERN people have been building there. Now, laboratories in an international field like high energy physics move their men and apparatus around from time to time. And as an example of this, we hope that a group of French physicists will bring their liquid hydrogen chamber to the Rutherford Laboratory later this year for an Anglo-French collaboration at Nimrod. This sort of development, in which European scientists collaborate in making the most effective use of their joint experience and facilities, is obviously a healthy one, and we should do all we can to encourage it. We now have seven sets of beam equipment for Nimrod, either working already or being erected from the components which we have, on which experiments can be mounted on the machine. There are eight groups of physicists, with members drawn from nine university departments, the Rutherford Laboratory, AERE, and AERE, who are preparing experiments on these beam lines using electronic detection techniques, the so-called counter techniques. Six of these have started to do their experiments. In addition, there are seven university departments at the moment in this country who maintain teams on bubble chamber work, analyzing photographs from bubble chambers, who are at the moment are working with film from CERN, sometimes from other laboratories overseas, but they all plan to analyze film from Nimrod later on. And counting these, there are about 150 high-energy physicists in this country at the moment who are either using or planning to use Nimrod. And only a fraction of these, about 20 or so, are at the moment members of our own staff. Now, we have to join in this research ourselves through the staff of our own laboratory. In this kind of field, you can't have effective research work if a laboratory like this is merely a service station giving out protons to customers who call for them. But our policy is to give the maximum amount of machine time to universities consistent with operational efficiency in the laboratory here and a healthy scientific base at the laboratory for our own work and the work of the visiting teams. We'll have to find the optimum distribution of effort between our own people and the visitors by experience.
Now, as you all know, nuclear and high energy physics is expensive, particularly the high energy end of the field. In this current financial year, which has just started,
the Rutherford Laboratory budget is just over £6 million, of which very roughly about £1.5 million will be spent on the tail end of the major capital construction program for Nimrod and its major apparatus, sort you will see when you go around. About another £1.5 million on salaries and wages and similar expenses of that kind. About £2 million is expected to be spent on materials, equipment and various bought-up services connected with the research and development, and in that I include not only the experiments on the machine but the operation and development of the equipment in the laboratory. And the remainder is distributed between services which we have from the Atomic Energy Authority, administrative costs, and a certain amount of expenditure on activities which are not connected with nuclear enrichment research. About 100 of our total staff are honours graduate physicists, most of whom are working on such problems as data reduction, study of particle beams and development of the accelerators, and only a smaller number, which I mentioned earlier, are joining in actually in the experiments on the machines. About 80 of our staff are professional engineers, and we, as most other people, all other people in this sort of field, find that we have to develop all our own special research apparatus, but of course we have most of it made in industry. We have well-equipped workshops for very specialized equipment which we have to make ourselves, and also for urgently needed items of a relatively small size. We get a lot of help from the AEA, in particular the Atomic Energy Research Establishment, particularly in this particular context on the development of electronics instruments for nuclear research, in which they have a joint interest with ourselves. Of course, whenever we can, we buy manufacturer standard equipment and instruments whenever they're suitable for our work, which is, of course, quite often. Our big question is how one can justify such relatively large expenditure and manpower on one field of pure research. One often hears quoted famous technological fallout in defense of programs which are much more expensive than what we do here. This argument is also often contested. It applies, for what it is worth, to high energy physics also. But in logic, such an argument can never be a justification of the work. It's merely a bonus which may come out as a byproduct of the work. The fundamental point is that science is an essential part of our culture, and that it's therefore very important to develop the most creative branches of science. I think most people would agree that support should be given to those fields of pure research which the leading minds, however we define those minds, find most challenging. A central field such as high energy physics, which is regarded as highly important by many of the world's ablest scientists, should certainly be supported, even though it's expensive, and even though it gives no guarantee of direct returns, except for its own part in the educational process, which at its most advanced level must be coupled with research. This field, of course, is supported now on a pretty massive scale in Western Europe, in the USA, in the USSR, and in some other places, in Japan, for example. Obviously, the overall problem in all these matters is to decide how much money should be invested in research and how it should be distributed between pure and applied science and between individual fields. It's very difficult to do this properly. Science is a complex structure which could be seriously harmed For example, if the criterion for getting a grant bigger than some arbitrarily chosen sum were to be a promise of quick economic returns. Pure and applied science feed on each other, and prosperity in a broad sense and not merely a financial sense for both is essential to future progress. We have a duty here and in places like this to be responsible and economical in our demands for and use of public funds, but the normal machinery of government is well adapted to correct any errors we may make from time to time in this regard. Our special duty is to find ways of maximizing the usefulness of our expensive facilities and of making them available to those best able to exploit them properly. We direct our energies and design our organization to these ends, which are the purposes of the National Institute for Research in Nuclear Science. Well, that concludes my formal remarks to you. I now have a couple of announcements. You may have had time to see already from the press handbooks which you have been given that we have arranged tours of the laboratory. In the top corner of your identification badge, you will find a letter which indicates the party to which you have been assigned for these tours. The guides to take you around the laboratory are waiting, or should be waiting, in the coffee lounge outside, and they will pick you up as you go up there. We will give you lunch at 1:30, and immediately after lunch there will be a further tour. Thank you very much.
Jay Gator, 21, please.